to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, videos, photos, silliness. Not last week's podcast yet, though, because I'm kind of slow. And other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Andy Ulrich.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been.
I'm on a work release program, so.
Well, there you go. Playing the part of the minion this evening will be Andy. You look so excited, right?
I'm always excited.
Yeah, I can tell. It's. I don't know what it is about me and like having a real upbeat, like boisterous guy sitting next to me in the booth here when we do the show. It's just.
And the Bengals won. I'm happy. That's all that matters to me.
I can tell. I can tell, right? So we've got all sorts of interesting things going on tonight. We've got Ernest Langdon is going to be joining us in just a second. We have a new producer sitting in the booth, Jimmy, who has not messed up anything yet, but if he does, I will make fun of him on air, as I am wont to do. Jimmy's like, yes! Is that a brown shirt? It is? It's all right. That's cool. We like all sorts here. Hey, just a quick reminder. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, without further ado, Ernest Langdon. At least I think it's Ernest Langdon. Ernest, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It was funny. We were trying to call you.
A weekend off after a week of training.
Well, hey, there you go. We were trying to call you before the show, and Jimmy says, who's this guy's name? Ernest. Well, the voicemail says Ryan. I'm like, huh, that's weird. I figured one of us dialed the number wrong. But anyway, I got a little nervous, but it's okay now. I'll be all right. So for those that don't know, man, if you could go over your background just real quick, and we'll hop right into the show. I was actually lucky enough to take your class last weekend. So I kind of want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. My background is, well, let's see, basically United States Marine Corps for 12 years, Scout Sniper for most of that time, did a period of time teaching anti-terrorism shooting school for the Marine Corps, spent some time in Panama in the first Gulf War as well. Gun industry since then, quite a bit of competition experience, as well as training, quite a bit of training experience, teaching people all over the world, really. So primarily handgun stuff.
I like how you say I've got a lot of competition experience. Well, didn't you win some national competitions with a double action pistol back when people thought that you couldn't win competitions with a double action pistol?
Yeah, I mean. I've got 10 national championships. Probably the two big ones were first year winning high overall in stock service pistol division in 2000 with a Beretta. And then 2003, I won CDP division with a SIG 220, which was probably the one that ruffled the most feathers, truth be told. So.
Well, you know, that's you can't do stuff like that. You gotta use a single action or a striker-fired gun. But so anyway, what I want to talk about, I guess, first off, I took your, and I'm going to get the name of the class wrong, and I apologize, the Advanced Pistol Skills, Tactical Pistol Skills class?
Advanced Tactical Pistol Skills, yeah.
Okay, yep. Cool. And for those that missed it, I, once again, did not get my fast coin, which, whoops. But we can talk about that later in the show. But one of the things that I've talked with a couple people that have taken that class now, one of the things that you kind of stressed heavily at the beginning of the class, and I know a lot of people, once they came away from the class, they were sort of weirded out by, or not weirded out by, but it just sort of got a lot of attention, was your take on pinning the trigger and how we reset the trigger and all that. Do you mind talking about that real quick?
Sure. I think the big issue is that a lot of people either teach it or have been taught it. And I think somewhere along the way, the reasoning behind why we taught it that way or what has been taught that way has been lost. And so I think what has happened in the past is people have tried to get, you know, when we're doing fundamentals, teaching people how to shoot, really break down the steps of pulling the trigger, meaning, you know, kind of taking the slack out, prepping it, firing the gun, you know, holding the trigger to the rear, resetting it till, you know, it resets, and then starting the process over again.
Right.
And somewhere along the line, that turned into you hold the trigger to the rear, let the gun fire, sights come back on target, and you reset the gun to exactly where you feel the click, you know, the tactile click, which is primarily a Glock thing more than anything else, because the Glocks have a really positive reset with a very tactile, you know, click that you feel, you can actually feel in your finger when you reset it. And, right. You know, the idea being that, hey, you know, that's the proper way to fire the gun. And the problem is what has happened for a lot of people is they went from this fundamental, here are the first steps on how you learn how to pull the trigger, to that's the way you always pull the trigger.
Right.
That's the way it should always be pulled. And then it turns into now you are making the gun fire based on what you feel instead of on what you see. And aiming the gun is really the important part of it, not necessarily, you know, feeling the reset as your indicator of when you fire the gun next.
Right.
And what I've seen over the last, you know, it's been a while, it's been many years that I've been doing this, but, you know, I kind of went full time back into training again about 2 years ago, and it's almost to, you know, almost like I say, it's almost like a cancer, like for people, that's all they can do is they've got two trigger modes, either wide open, basically just slapping the trigger, or this slow, methodical reset, you know, pin the trigger to the rear, reset it slowly, and then fire the gun. And as soon as I try to get them to shoot at speed, they start focusing on that and not necessarily on what they see, and then they just can't shoot at speed. So it just doesn't make any sense. It's a colossal waste of time to be holding that trigger to the rear while the sights are on target.
We got about a minute and a half in the segment, and something that you kind of touched on. Just real quick, would you say that people are oftentimes trying to shoot based off of what they think they should be doing versus what they're seeing?
Well, what I mean is what they feel, meaning that,
yeah.
And you saw it in the class, some people would literally, they would be holding the trigger to the rear, the gun would cycle, the sights are on target, and then they start resetting the trigger slow, and as soon as they feel or hear that click, then they just hammer the trigger again.
Right.
Because it's like, that's their indicator. That's my go button. When I reset it, then that should pull the trigger again. And in the meantime, they're just trying to hold the sights there and until the gun fires. Now, the issue there is it's fine if someone's just standing there shooting. I just had to explain this to somebody in an email today. It's fine if I'm just standing there shooting at a stationary paper target where I'm stationary.
Right.
But the example that I was giving is, like, if someone is charging you with a knife, you're not going to sit there and slowly reset the gun. Okay.
Right.
If you have got multiple adversaries that you're shooting, are you really going to shoot at one and then hold the trigger to the rear while you swing the gun to the other adversary and then reset it and pull it? It's ludicrous to even think that that is the proper way to manipulate the trigger.
Right.
Well,
I was going to say, hold that thought real quick because we have to go to break. So the reality is, and then we'll get right back with Ernest Langdon from Langdon Tactical. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Darkstar Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse in Hereford, or only know the color of your mom's basement and the Cheeto-stained clothes on her floor, Darkstar Gear has a solution to your gear-carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers, or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt-wrapped sheath for when you need to shank a fool with your popular fixed-blade centerline knife. And it really ties your EDC together, like that one rug I used to have. Check out the holsters used by myself and many of the show's guests. They're even standard issue for Ballistic Radio minions. Find out more at darkstargear.com. So, we've got Andy Ulrich joining us in studio.
Who's breathing too heavy.
You're still doing it.
I'm a heavy breather.
You're excited to be near me is what it is.
I'm a big guy, man. I need more oxygen.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's just whenever you like get right on top of the microphone like this and then go... I realized that I left I didn't actually put Ernest on hold during the break, so he was just...
listening to us babble.
Probably. Or listening to nothing. One of those. I don't know which. But, so anyway, let's get Ernest back on the line. Ernest, how are you?
Yes, sir.
So you were saying before the break that... And I told you to stop, and then I forgot what you were going to say because I didn't know what you were going to say.
I think we're at the reality is point. We're talking about trigger control and resetting and whatnot.
Right, right. So I'm sorry. Please continue. The whole advertisers thing, they get funny about that. So
right, they have to take breaks. You got to pay the bills.
I guess.
The reality is, trigger control in the case of defensive shooting, the individual has to make a decision at an instant point in time when you pull the trigger.
Right.
And at that point, you're probably going to pull the trigger multiple times. So holding the trigger to the rear and resetting it slowly just doesn't make any sense. It's not going to work out. There's just too many places where I can prove that that's just not the way that people actually pull the trigger under duress. Like I said, it works great if you're shooting on paper. It works okay if you're shooting on paper, I should say.
Yeah.
Stationary where the target's stationary. But as you saw in the class last week, when you're moving and the target's moving, you got an instant point in time where those sights end up where they need to be because the target's moving and you're moving, and you have to pull the trigger immediately. If you're holding the trigger to rear, aiming the gun, and you have to reset it and then pull it, it makes no sense whatsoever, and it's not going to work out well for you.
Well, so that brings something else to mind, too, is that a lot of the practice that people do is on a stationary target while they're stationary. One of the things that I thought was really fun about your class is there's a large portion of day two spent shooting moving targets while you're moving. Do you think not enough people get to do that, or do they even not even consider that they need to do that or that it's any different?
Well, yes.
Thank you, Ernest. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Not enough people get to do it, and not enough people really realize that that's what's going to be going on. I think that it's funny because law enforcement people, I see it all the time. They make fun of law enforcement saying, "Oh, they don't hit, they miss too much." And they say this right up, they've come off the range shooting a stationary target at 7 yards where they're stationary, paper target that's not doing anything to them.
Right.
Nothing's going on there. And then they go, "Well, how can you miss?" And you go, "Okay, well, try doing this when you're moving, the target's moving, and it's shooting at you."
Right.
Might make things a little bit more difficult. And so the answer is yes, you need to be, if you're really serious about, defensive shooting, it's pretty reasonable to assume that people aren't going to stand still during a gunfight. Nobody's going to stand there like a B-27 target, stationary while you shoot at them.
Man, that'd be nice if they did, wouldn't it? Be kind of cool.
Well, it would make it a lot easier, but that's just not going to happen. You don't have to need a significant amount of training to realize that when people start shooting at you, you should probably start moving.
Yeah,
it's pretty instinctive.
Yeah, I remember the first force on force I did that was not grounded, and pretty much any time, anyone stood still, they got shot a lot, mm-hmm. a whole lot. And
yep.
And the sim rounds will get you to move, whether you want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you.
A level of built-in encouragement.
Yes. Yes. It's like I think you actually said that when we were talking about it in class, that force on force should hurt, or at least
right.
a little bit.
It's supposed to hurt.
Anyway. So my next question, I guess, as far as where do you see most people falling apart when they come to this class or, in general or in their shooting? Or do they just stop at when they think they're good or what? What?
That's a good question. I think it varies dramatically person to person where people have problems when it comes to shooting. Relate directly back to their personal experiences and how they were trained and the way they practice. So I think the more diverse someone's shooting background, the better they do in a class like I put on that advanced class that you were in. So, like in your case, you've got a fairly diverse shooting background, and there was a couple of other people in the class that did as well. They did quite well. But as you know, there was a few people that had a fair amount of training, but most of that training was based around pretty static, standard drills, step off the center line, shoot a couple of shots at another stationary target. And once we started making the move a lot, started making the targets move, and then started making them shoot the moving targets while they were moving, it was a way more difficult skill for those individuals. And we had some law enforcement guys and whatnot in the class that had never done anything like that. So to a certain extent, the experience of getting to do all of that, my theory is it takes a lot of the anxiety out of it, and it's a significant step for people to have a comfort level of realizing they can hit a moving target. They can hit a moving target while they're moving. They can hit a target while they're moving. All of that kind of building block process helps, put them in a situation where they realize what they can do.
Right. Well, and that was, I tell you, because the beginning of day two was relatively demoralizing for me. Cause and for those that don't know, the FAST test is something that Todd Green and, Simon, who I won't get into his last name because he likes to keep that to himself, but came up with a number of years ago. And, Todd was running it for quite some time. You've now taken over with that. I was trying for a fast coin for my second official attempt, didn't get it again. And I'll tell you, man, that was a bit of a downer. It was actually kind of nice to end on the shooting on the move because I didn't do terrible with that, which made me feel somewhat.
No, you did quite good at that. And you gave away the hat at the end of the day, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I did. Well, I mean,
totally did. You had it won. You won it on the first pass, and then wanted to do better. Wanted to shoot it clean again in under 3 seconds. It was a specific drill that I run in a lot of my classes. And I said, you made the offer. It was actually your idea. We'll put the hat back on if I get to run it again.
Yeah.
And we did, and you pushed it really hard and missed the shot. And then a guy stepped up and ran it and shot it clean and took the hat from you, which had to be pretty disappointing. But you put your money where your mouth was, and hey, I really want to try this. So
let me do the, because I think that was Simon that got the hat, wasn't it? I think it was Simon Ho, I believe. But he was running
Simon Ho.
He was running the G43, which was really cool. Though he didn't run that from concealment. I just have to point out, since I lost, and that's what losers do.
But you beat him. But you beat him on the first time around.
Oh, yes, I did.
On the first time around.
I did.
It was the third time around that you put the hat back on the table.
Well, that's...
You ran it twice.
Yeah.
And the third time, you're like, I want to run it again. I said, well, run it one more time. I said, how bad do you want to do it?
Yeah.
And he said, I'll put the hat back on the table.
Yeah, well...
That's where it came from.
Hey.
It was his third run that got him the hat.
Yeah. I will point out that the third run that I only dropped the one shot, I ran it in like 2.8 something. But yes, I did drop a shot, and that didn't count.
So. Oh yeah, you burned it. You burned it really fast. But one of the points of that drill is that
misses don't fix anything.
Game.
Yep.
You're right.
Misses don't fix anything.
That's right.
So
that's right.
We got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Let's talk about that drill real quick. So what is that drill, and what's it trying to do?
So that particular drill is called nine-shot close speed. I've got it. There's some YouTube videos of it that I put up. It, basically, the idea behind the drill is not necessarily that it's a tactical drill. A lot of my drills are not tactical, and I try to say that up front. It's a shooting drill. It's a shooting exercise, if you will. Because the drill is run at 2 yards on three targets, there's a lot of swinging the gun around. It puts you in a situation where you want to shoot as fast as you possibly can. And so the point is to give you the opportunity as a shooter to shoot that close as fast as you can on multiple targets and see what it looks like to be running right at that limit of your human function, right at that limit of your, visual operating tempo and your physical operating tempo. Because most people don't get a chance to do that. They have like a set standard, hey, I want to draw this fast. I want to shoot this many shots this fast.
Right.
And this drill is like, no, it's as fast as you can go. Here are the targets. They're this far away. And I think it's valuable from that standpoint. I mean, you would not want to stand toe-to-toe with, you know, three people, for example, on this drill and, you know, duke it out with guns. But you would be moving your feet, as we pointed out in another part of the class, and backing away, you know, creating distance. But in this particular case, it gives you the opportunity to shoot at that wide-open cadence that most people don't get a chance to do.
Well, and it's certainly an interesting way to really see what you're capable of from a speed standpoint. Yeah, so anyway. Hey, man, we have to go to break again, those darn commercials. But when we get back, we will talk a little bit more about the class I took last weekend, some other stuff that Ernest has going on. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Barrage, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we gave Andy the fuzzy bit on his microphone. We're going to see how that goes.
I'll put a picture on there.
Okay.
The anti-breathing
device.
Prophylactic.
Is that what? Yeah, I guess. Something like that. So, anyway, we're talking with Ernest Langdon. Ernest, are you still there?
Yep, still here.
There's always that brief pause when I ask that question before someone chooses to answer, and I'm like, hmm. So I hung up on Todd like four times one show once. Andy was there for that.
I was.
I think it's, yeah, anyway.
You don't panic like you used to, though.
No, it's almost like I do this professionally now or something like that. I can talk for an hour. No one will want to listen, but I can do it. So anyway, I got to say, just, and this is a side note, Ernest, but I bought a SIG P226 Legion, one of their new ones from Top Gun Supply, this last Thursday, specifically because of you and talking about double action pistols in your class and all that. So thank you.
Cool. Do you already pick it up?
Not yet. It should be in town Tuesday, probably, since tomorrow's a holiday.
I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that guy.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, I've got a lot of time with SIG, so I'm actually really interested to see, because, you know, it looks a lot like I did a project with a Salient 220 Mark 25, and it looks like some of the design features they put on the Legion gun are oddly familiar. I don't know where they could have gotten those ideas from. Right. But so anyway, so talking a little bit more about your class, as far as what made you evolve to where you're at right now with what you're teaching? Was there any one moment where you're like, what I thought was wrong and I need to fix this for myself and other people? Or was it just kind of a long road to get where you're at?
Yeah, I would say it was a fairly long road to get where I'm at. There hasn't been any, I don't think there's been any one specific thing. I got a lot of influences from a lot of different people. I would say probably, a lot of different shooting schools over the years. A lot of what I teach, as I told everybody in the class, comes out of the HRP program when I taught that. And the reasoning behind that, or the reason I believe that's the case, is it was kind of instilled in me at that time that whatever you're teaching, there has to be whys behind it. You can't just say, do it like this. You have to explain why, because understanding the whys behind the technique is what validates it and make people really understand why, you know, the reasonings behind doing it a certain or a specific way. So that's important. I've taken instruction from a lot of different people, law enforcement guys, SWAT team guys. Most recently I did some training with Rob Latham, which, you know, was phenomenal. I mean, he's probably one of the best teachers out there that I've ever seen. He's a phenomenal analyzer of people's mistakes, and obviously a phenomenal shooter as well. So, you know, there's a lot of influences over the years.
So, and it's funny, too, that you're talking about you know, going and seeking training. A lot of people, once they got to your level, would just sort of stop at some point and say, "Nah, I'm good." But you, not really about that. I mean, do you think that you can always learn something?
I continue to go try to get to a couple of classes a year. Sometimes it's difficult from a scheduling standpoint. You know, this year I went out to California and took a class from a friend of mine, John Montenegro. He's actually a L.A. Sheriff's SED team guy, Special Enforcement Bureau, with a lot of experience, 18 years with the Sheriff's Department, 11 years in Compton, I think, and then now like 6 years or so with the SED team. A lot of experience, really sharp guy. And he's actually been one of my students, and then found out he was shooting, and, you know, he's actually a coin holder, believe it or not. He's the only coin that I've actually given away.
Well, there you go.
Really, really sharp guy. And so I went out and took his class this year, which was really interesting and a lot of fun. Learned a lot from him.
So, and that seems to be one of the things I've noticed about a lot of the guys that I respect in the industry, or at least a lot of the trainers that I respect in the industry, is they still go out and they take instruction from people. Well, you know, after they've already made a name for themselves as an instructor and all that. I want to circle back just real quick. And one of the things that you were talking about at the beginning of this segment was understanding why we do things and mm-hmm. why we teach things. Do you think that there's not enough of that right now?
I don't think there's enough of that. I guess it depends on who you're taking training from. but it's been my experience, over many years now that often it's like, hey, here's how you do it. And the specifics of the why are kind of lost sometimes, not always, but sometimes. And what I've seen, and I've seen this in a couple of programs that I was involved in the Marine Corps, once the whys are lost, then all of a sudden that leaves the door open for things to change unknowingly. So the technique changes just quite, just subtly, the way the instructor teaches it, and then the next instructor teaches a little different, and the next instructor teaches a little different. Or it gets watered down, from person to person to person, and then it's just like, hey, here's how you do it. And then often they're teaching just a little bit the wrong thing, and they don't even know why they're teaching it that way.
Right.
You're just saying, here, yeah, do it like this. Well, and then you look at that and go, well, why do you do it like that? And I've actually seen the kind of almost like, well, panic, make up the reason why,
right,
at the last second. Well, I do it like this because, and then they try to come up with some tactical reason why they do it like that, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like the other thing, too, that you talk about a little bit is like context. And one of the things that, going even back to the beginning of the show, when you're talking about pinning the trigger and all that, For something like a bullseye shooter or like a long range rifle shooter or something like that, it might not be a bad technique at all, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if I was benching a handgun at 50 yards trying to get the best possible group out of it, I probably would pin the trigger. But I don't do a lot of that shooting, and that's not, not my number one reasoning behind, shooting a handgun. If you're shooting a sniper rifle, a bolt gun, obviously there's no rush to reset the trigger because what are you doing,
right?
It's not going to do anything to you, cycle the bolt. There's reasonings of following through, if you will, on the trigger.
Yeah. But
at the distances we're talking about defensive handgun shooting, the truth is follow through is probably a fallacy. And the gun, the bullet's long since out of the barrel. And in the case of a handgun bullet, pretty much everybody agrees that all handgun bullets, regardless of caliber, are anemic at best.
Yeah.
And what that means is if you are in a life and death shooting situation, you're probably going to have to shoot people multiple times. So that being the case, I need to probably pull the trigger quite a few times before I've gotten the job done, and holding the trigger to the rear is a waste of time.
Well, and the reason why I brought that up again is like context is one of those things that I've been sort of stressing as I talk with people more and more lately. And it's always kind of nice to be able to pull out examples of exactly what I'm talking about when I say you really need to understand the context behind certain techniques and all that.
Sure.
So we got about a minute and a half left in this segment, then we're into the last segment of the show because it's a quick hour on radio. Is there anything you think a lot of people are doing other than pinning the trigger that maybe they shouldn't be doing or should give some thought as to why they're doing it?
Oh, wow. That's a can of worms.
I know, right?
Things that people are right, yeah.
And you're the one that gets yelled at if you say something people don't like. It's not my fault. I just ask the questions.
Right. Yeah, pinning the trigger thing is going to be pretty controversial as it is because a lot of people are, you know, hardcore believers in, you know, holding the trigger back, letting the gun cycle or resetting slowly. I would say that one of the things that people do, and we'll go back to trigger control again, is they also want to believe that slow, steady, increasing pressure to the rear till you get a surprise break. You know, that from a tactical or a defensive shooting standpoint is a fallacy. Because, you know, I understand the reasoning behind it from a marksmanship standpoint of like, hey, I'm teaching somebody to pull a trigger, so I want them to just pull it slowly until the gun goes off and, you know, they'll get an idea of what it's like. But from a training standpoint, when you're trying to, once you get beyond that, the fundamentals, if you will, there's almost no reasoning to be learning how to pull a trigger that way because it doesn't relate to the way you pull the trigger under duress.
Well, let's pause right there because I got to go to break. We're talking with Ernest Langdon. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target, the Arch Frame Target Stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Fit their steel targets with more than 50,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them online at TacStrike.com. And I actually want to say they were running a sale not too long ago. I want to say 10% off, but if they're not doing that now, ignore me. It's not their fault. So I am the best spokesperson ever. Everyone should pay me to represent them this well. So anyway, we're talking with Ernest Langdon. Ernest, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Perfect. So you were saying before the break that the surprise break is another thing that people are doing with the trigger press that given the context, there's that word again, of what we are doing, maybe they're placing way too much of an emphasis on that?
Yeah. I think I get the idea behind learning the fundamentals of marksmanship and going that way. And if their goal from shooting is to, you know, win bullseye matches and go to Camp Perry or shoot tight groups at 50 yards, and, you know, I get that. But if we're talking about defensive shooting, you're pretty much talking about stuff inside 7 yards. You have to pull the trigger, you know, in a very compressed time frame. So the, you know, learning how to pull the trigger in that environment is a critical skill. And I think a lot of people, you know, setting themselves up for failure with the way they do a lot of their training, or in a lot of cases, what they're actually teaching. They're telling people, hey, slow, steady, squeeze to the rear. I see this in law enforcement a lot, you know, surprise break. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Is it really a surprise when you shoot an adversary? Should you be like, oh, my gun went off? You know, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
Right.
From a shooting someone who's trying to kill you standpoint. Well, I didn't know, but my gun just went off.
Well, and that's one of those things that will get you put in jail, oddly enough, if you, you know.
So it doesn't make any sense from that standpoint. And the reality is it's not going to be a surprise. You're going to be pulling the trigger hard and fast, probably as hard and fast as you can, because if you don't, you're going to die, which is the reason you're justified in doing what you're doing.
Right.
So learning how to shoot that way is a critical skill. And most people, you know, don't really give themselves the right type of training to learn how to do that.
So is it just a misunderstanding of what's actually happening, or is it not knowing how good they can be, or is it a combination of these things?
I think it's a combination of all of these, of all of the above. I mean, it's a misunderstanding of what reality is going to be like. you know, law enforcement is a good example. You know, being a deputy sheriff in Virginia, they, you know, the time frames that we're allowed to qualify under are extensive. We get a ridiculous amount of time to do what we need to do. I think the tightest time frame we have is 4 seconds to draw and shoot 2 shots. And as you saw, you know, you and I were drawing and shooting, you know, 9 shots on 3 targets with 8 acquisitions in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is the reality of the speed that's going to happen. And if you need to learn to see what that movie's like to shoot at that limit of human function, and the practice that you do needs to be generated towards that. As you saw in my class, I'm a big believer in that you're going to be operating the gut at the subconscious level. There's not going to be any conscious thought as to
right.
how you grip the gun, how you aim the gun, how you pull the trigger. So if you spend all your time on the range trying to get, you know, shoot little groups and get, you know, slow, steady squeeze to the rear, is not going to prepare you or prepare your subconscious to deal with the reality of a close interpersonal, you know, gunfight at very close distances. So I think that is something to be said. We tell people all the time, well, you can't jerk the trigger, you can't jerk the trigger. But the reality is, if you're shooting like we were shooting at that close speed drill, we're jerking the trigger.
Yeah.
You can't not, you know, by NRA definition, you can't shoot at that speed and not jerk the trigger.
Right.
You're pulling the trigger as fast and hard as you can. The difference is learning how to do that and not misalign the gun with the target. You know, hold it within the acceptable, you know, area that it needs to be when the gun fires. So there's a lot to be learned, or for a lot of people, that is probably a big weak point that they have in their training, is they've never shot like that.
Right.
Or they do go to the range and they shoot like that, and their level of accuracy is completely unacceptable.
Well,
you know, I have been to indoor ranges where guys are doing that, and they're just, you know, they're hosing and they're shooting and their shots are going all over the place. And, you know, you're just wasting ammo because you're not hitting anything that you're aiming at.
Right. Right. I mean, if you're getting, you know, it's one thing. If you're able to shoot quickly and actually still hit things, then yes. Like you said, now we got about 2.5-3 minutes left in the show. Are you going to be teaching more classes next year? I mean, I know that you took a little bit of a break from instructing. What's the plans for next year? Or do you?
Yeah, the plan is to teach quite a bit next year as well. I taught a lot of classes this year, way more to law enforcement this year than I ever have in the past. It's been the majority of my students this year have been law enforcement, and it's gone really, really well. My plan is to, shoot, or teach a lot more classes next year, or not more than I did this year, but at least as many.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to change the format a little bit, in that often the advanced class is, filled with a bunch of people that are not actually ready for an advanced class. I shouldn't say filled, but there are people in the class that are not ready for an advanced class. And that's not necessarily their fault. I think it's my fault to a certain extent, in that I haven't set them up to say, this is what's expected of you when you get here.
Right.
You should be able to do this. And so next year, hopefully I'm going to continue to do my regular tactical pistol skills class, but the advanced class is going to be formatted a little bit different. We're going to skip kind of the early lecture theory of training.
Yeah.
I'd like to set it up to where it's only people that have been to my tactical pistol skills class and understand the way I teach and my theory of training. And then we can jump in and get into hopefully a lot more meat, if you will, and really let those people improve upon their skills.
Well, there you go. And the other thing you were saying too, I mean, we gotta get here in a little bit, but, you were mentioning running the gun at the subconscious level, and one of the things I sort of came to realize at the end of the class on day two, and we talked about it a little bit afterwards at dinner, was that at a certain point when you start, like, slowing yourself down to do things well, you almost are being counterproductive with that depending on where you're at on the skill level, right?
You can be. I mean, there's two parts. First of all, if you're looking to change anything or really focus and improve on anything, you actually have to slow yourself down,
right?
To the point where you can consciously think through what you're doing. Because if you shoot if you're just shooting with time based and you become outcome or, you know, results oriented versus process oriented. And so your process becomes flawed, but you're just trying to, just because you're trying to go faster.
Right.
So that is an, you know, that's an important thing to understand. I find often for a lot of us when we, for example, if you're trying to demonstrate something to someone, if you're trying to demo it at a slower cadence,
right,
that can be difficult because you're now you're thinking about something that you normally don't have to think about, and or you're trying to shoot based on cadence versus based on
what you see.
What you see,
right?
So you're like, oh, well, the sights are already there, but I can't shoot yet. I got to wait till this time, and then I pull the trigger again, and then it's the same process that other people
right.
get. But they're shooting based on cadence first on. Versus based on what they see.
Right. Well, hey, man, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's that time to the end of the show. I guess this means I'm just going to have to have you back. Thanks for coming on tonight, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man. Take care.
Yep. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week. Hey, that was quick.